Well, if I could just take a step back to when we started the process 2.5 years ago, one thing is that, you know, we've been given a very broad remit by the by General Synod, and General Synod has asked us to look at all sorts of aspects of human sexuality in the context of Christian belief, and we discussed quite widely about how we would go about this, and it came down in the end, I suppose, to what we felt was what is, you know, termed the presenting issue here, the issue that was really before us and the reason why the Select Committee was set up, and that was to look at same-sex attraction. So that's where we, that was our starting point really, and there were two parallel ways in which we went about this. One, we were looking at the scriptures, and we were looking at particular biblical texts, and the other was that we were listening to people's experience of same-sex attraction and living within the church. So these two parallel streams we were running at the same time.
Yeah. And what did you get from looking at the scriptures? Because a lot of people would say that there isn't that much in the scriptures, or it's not entirely clear that same-sex attraction was a big issue for Jesus.
Well, I think that, you know, generally speaking, we were first of all looking at, you know, the interpretation of scripture and how you interpret it. And in reading scripture, people interpreting things in different ways, and the way in which you then use that material in discussion. In the guide, we have two members of the committee have in fact looked at the particular scriptures that relate to this topic. And indeed, as you quite rightly say, Jesus himself doesn't say anything on the subject, and yet they come out with different conclusions.
And what are their different conclusions? I presume one is that it was tolerated, and one is maybe that it wasn't tolerated.
It's really too simplistic to put it in that way, which is why we've produced the guide as it is, to try and, in a sense, avoid simplistic this or that, you know, that you've got to go and one way or the other, and I think it really is important to read through what their moral reasoning is from the scriptures. I think one's really got to go to the guide, and I wouldn't like to summarize what they've said in a few words.
And then the other part of it, where you're listening to people's experience, people's own experience, people who have experienced same-sex attraction, who are trying to live out a Christian life and trying to combine those two aspects of their lives.
Yes, we undertook this over a period of 3 months at the end of 2014. And we did it in a number of ways. We went to visit people. We had interviews with them for about an hour each. We scripted those. We sent them to them for them to check over. We asked them to give us submissions themselves if they wished to. And some people just wrote things in. In the end, we accumulated, I think, about 120 pages of TypeScript. Then we needed to distill that down into something that could go into the guide that, for one thing, wasn't going to identify people directly, but also was going to give the sort of information that we'd received in a way that was going to reflect across Ireland how people in these situations were expressing their feelings. And it was extremely moving. I took part in quite a lot of that, and It was a very, very valuable experience.
And what in particular stood out for you? I mean, were there recurring themes that stood out?
There were recurring themes, of course, and I think that helped us distill. I did the distillation work myself, actually, working it down from 120 pages to 3 or 4. So one would expect some similar material to be coming through. I think one of the outstanding things is that it made us all realize that, if we didn't know it before, that this is something that's affecting people's lives, that simply just to talk about it as an issue is cold, and, you know, there is much more to it than that. Yes, it is an issue, but it's affecting people's lives, and so one needs to be very careful.
Yeah, of course, because people do, as you say, talk about it in abstract terms, in terms of you know, whether it should be accepted or not accepted and so on. But, you know, for people who are living that or people who have that experience, it's very hard for them to sort of always be waiting to see whether they're going to be accepted or not accepted by their church.
Yes, I think we're extremely conscious, and no matter what conclusions one comes to over this, that there is a very serious pastoral issue for the church here, for all of the churches, you know, not just for the Church of Ireland, and that is something that we need to address, whatever ultimate theological conclusions one comes to.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's very hard, though, I presume, for people who do experience same-sex attraction to, you know, to try to grasp the theological conclusions, if the theological conclusions are almost against them, or if they feel like those theological conclusions are against them. It's very difficult for somebody to take that on board, isn't it?
Well, I think that a number of the people that spoke to us had given this a great deal of thought and prayer and study. One of the things we don't know, and there's no way of knowing, is how many people didn't come forward. Maybe would have liked to have come forward, but weren't, didn't feel able to, and why? You know, there's absolutely no reason for that. You know, so the, exactly the sort of question that you put forward there about how they feel in terms of what the church is saying on this topic, how that's affecting them within. We know from the people that came forward, but not from those that haven't.
Do you think there was a hesitancy in coming forward because maybe they felt they would be judged? Maybe they weren't entirely comfortable with their own sexuality, or they weren't entirely comfortable talking about it?
Well, all I can do is, of course, speak of those that did. And certainly a number expressed how difficult it was for them to come forward, and which, as far as one can understand this, you know, one can see that it must have been exceptionally difficult for some people to come forward and do this, and, you know, to deal with that within the confidentiality of an hour's talk between two or three people is something that we were very, very careful about, and, you know, we do recognise that.
What about the global church, the wider church community? Because, you know, in Ireland, same-sex attraction is already quite socially acceptable. Even if it's, you know, whether it is or isn't accepted in various different churches is another thing, but socially it's very acceptable. But in countries where socially it isn't very acceptable, they have a much harder time trying to talk to their church, and in fact they may be faced with churches that are just not going to listen to them.
Well, indeed, it is very difficult to talk for other churches in you know, particularly not in Western countries, and I just don't know. I'm just not in a position to know how they would go about such a discussion. But if in the Church of Ireland we can model something now over the next 12 months where we produce these study modules, because it's not just the guide, we've produced study modules with it. There's always the hope that maybe other churches, other church groups may look at what we're doing and say, well, maybe there's something in this, or perhaps, well, or as it's interesting to see the Church of Ireland doing that, but actually I think we could do this better in another way, but maybe we can learn from it. So I would say this is a step on the way, and hopefully maybe the idea of this listening, learning, conversation, dialogue can be modelled by the Church of Ireland and work well. Of course, we don't know yet because we haven't started.